ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadda Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we'll get into the worst to first conversation in the NFL. 17 of the last 19 years, there's been a team in the NFL that has went from last place to first place. Who's it going to be this year? We're also going to challenge you a little bit with that. We'll get to that in 3 minutes. But first, let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Eric, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What is the one show you hang on to, even though you feel like it's not very good anymore?
SportsCenter.
Well, Cobra Kai has always been good, and it never gets old. But one of the shows that I hang on to is Pawn Stars. I love that show, but I think the last couple years, it's lost its flavor. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Appreciate the call, Eric. Pawn Stars. I've noticed
that's
that.
That's what I said. That the Pawn Stars early on was like fun and to see if they could actually uncover a gem or two. And there was bickering and a little bit of kind of fighting. Yeah. And then it felt like all of a sudden it turned a corner and it got too commercialized and it got too, like,
I feel like they almost made it a production.
Yeah.
I feel like they almost
agreed.
Made it. Like, that's one of the shows that I'll watch in the hotels. Like, there's certain shows that I feel like are hotel shows. That's one of them. Pawn Stars is a hotel show. What is, like, the Wicked Fishing or whatever? I forget what it's called. Like, Wicked Tuna. They're out, like, deep sea fishing for tuna. Or they even, like, they had the pods for the crabs. Another good hotel show.
There are a couple shows that I think have pivoted really well to, like, good social content. And I would tell you Pawn Stars is one of those.
Yeah.
Like, I'll get recommended videos for Pawn Stars on, like, Facebook, and I can catch myself watching 5 minutes of Pawn Stars. I don't need to sit down and watch a half hour of Pawn Stars anymore, but
right.
5 minutes, like, interesting part of the show, I think it fits,
like,
really well.
Like, a good back and forth and a good couple of, was the guy, Dave, going, yeah, and then all of a sudden, you know, they find some kind of treasure. So that's great, but now every freaking bidder's got their own logo and their own, that they're hawking this and they're doing that, and I'm just like, okay, I'm out. For all that, they got too big for their britches.
Yeah, but like, hotel television viewing's weird because you don't have your DVR, you don't have your cable package or Hulu package or whatever you use. So you're at the mercy of the channels that they have. You're at the mercy of what time they come on. So usually, like at night, what are your options? Your options usually are like Pawn Stars or Wicked Tuna or all these weird shows like on the Weather Channel, like especially if there's not sports on. It's weird. Hotel viewing is different. 713-780-ESPN. You got to be built different to watch television in a hotel. 713-780-3776. Want to ask you the question. A team has gone worst to first in 17 of the last 19 years in the NFL. So if you look at last year's last place teams, we're going to eliminate one of them for the sake of conversation. But last year's NFL teams that finished in last place or tied for last place, the New York Football Jets, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Ravens, the Browns, the Broncos, the Giants, the Lions, the Panthers, and the Seahawks. I feel the obvious answer there is probably Baltimore.
Yeah,
Lamar
Baltimore
Jackson.
And the Broncos. Broncos could catch lightning in a bottle with Russ, but I would say number one is definitely Baltimore.
Okay, so my answer would be Baltimore, too, because, look, Lamar Jackson, you're hoping he's going to have a full, healthy season. He's also playing for a contract, remember. J.K. Dobbins is back. Gus Edwards is back. You're bringing back a lot of players that you lost. The defense is still very good. To me, Raven, if you're just taking a straw poll of all of these things, the answer is going to be the Ravens. Now, if you eliminate the Ravens, who is the other team that you're picking? Because now I think the question becomes difficult, 713-780-ESPN. If you take the Ravens out of this conversation, who is the one team that is most likely to go worst to first? Jets, Jags, Browns, Broncos, Giants, Lions, Panthers, Seahawks. You say Broncos.
Yeah.
I think Denver's
finishing.
They have
everything. They have everything.
I think I'm predicting them to finish last in that division.
Okay, but if you're saying of all the other teams that really have less than they do, at least they have a really good defense. They have, you know, significant weapons still at the skill positions.
Mm-hmm.
They have a guy that's been there, done that before at quarterback. So they have a chance, and they have two running backs. So they have a chance. I mean, the other teams I look at, there's so many holes. There's just, I just don't realize. And if the Browns were completely healthy, that'd be the easiest answer too. But we know their issues. So I think, to me, the only other team that could even be possibly relevant in the conversation is Denver.
The problem that I have with Denver is their division. Like, sure. I don't see the Broncos finishing first place in that division whenever you have Kansas City, who I don't think is going anywhere, even though some people might think so. Las Vegas was a playoff team last year, and they've added some significant pieces. They added Chandler Jones on the defensive side. They added Devontae Adams. No one really left. So they're still going to be very, very good in my mind as well. And then you have the Chargers, who was a lot of people's darling last year that missed the playoffs because they lost to the Texans, one of the reasons that they didn't get in. So that division is very, very difficult. So the Broncos have a tough challenge to navigate. Now, you're right. The other teams become – okay, do you see a scenario which the Jets can win the AFC East?
Nope. I don't.
Who do you think wins the East?
Buffalo and New England.
Yeah, Buffalo.
And the Dolphins are supposed to be much better.
I could see the Jets like in a – you know, total reach. If I'm reaching a lot, I could see the Jets, like everything goes right, being better than New England, being better than Miami. Like, I'm not saying I believe that, but a total reach. I don't see them being better than Buffalo unless Josh Allen goes down.
But
they still have Case Keenum.
If not for the division, I think the easiest answer is Denver.
But the division matters.
But it does. So with all factors being considered, I still think they have the best playoff caliber roster, not named the Ravens, on the teams that you rattled off. Because a lot of people, and I'm not one of them, because you know I think you and I are kind of on the same page. I think Daniel Jones can play a little bit, and I know they're getting Barkley back healthy. A lot of people think the Giants might be the worst team in football this year. So you look at the Giants, you look at the Jags.
See, that division's could
be Seattle with no quarterback to me, and their defense isn't even close anymore.
No, I think Seattle's going to be one of the worst teams in the league.
They're awful, too.
I think the Panthers are going to be one of the worst teams in the league. I think the Giants are going to be better offensively than they have been because they brought in an offensive-minded coach, Daboll, and Daniel Jones. He's not Josh Allen, but he's got some skills.
I think he's got a little talent.
He's got some. No, I'm saying he's not Josh Allen. I think he's got some skills that are going to play. And look, if Saquon Barkley's healthy, they have some skill position guys that can be okay. The Browns would be a popular answer if Deshaun Watson's suspension was only 6 games because, okay, you got Nick Chubb. You might have Kareem Hunt, even though he's demanding a trade. Like, let Jacoby Brissett get through the first 6 games at 3-3, and then you get Deshaun Watson back. You go to battle and see if you can win the division from behind. But the suspension's still looming over Cleveland that they're kind of hard to predict.
And a lot of people said, well, they should go out and still trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, and they can salvage what they need to salvage and still be really good. No way, because of the fact that he's got to come into a whole totally new system, learn the playbook, learn all the language, learn all the audibles, learn everything that it takes 7 to 9 months to do so. If that was the move, that was a move that should have been made, you know, in June when he had plenty of ample time to get ready for the season. But if you're going to try and make that move right in week one of the preseason, good luck to you. I think that ship has sailed.
See, Rex Ryan says you can't use logic with this discussion. It's always a team that no one saw coming. If there's one team that I don't see coming, but I'm going to try to like advocate for, would be Jacksonville. I could see Jacksonville having a huge turnaround this year in the NFL. They've upgraded so much at head coach, going from Urban Meyer to a legitimate head coach in Doug Peterson, who once upon a time had Carson Wentz in the MVP conversation, and we were calling Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson the next Brady and Manning in the AFC. Didn't really work out all that well. But you bring back Travis Etienne. They also lost James Robinson with injury last year. So you have a pretty good 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
Look, I know that Christian Kirk made a lot of money. Christian Kirk's a good football player. He might be overpaid, but Christian Kirk's a good football player. They added Trevon Walker defensively. They have Josh Allen over there already as well. And the AFC South, if you look around, like just at the AFC South compared to other divisions around the NFL, it's winnable. Like,
it's gettable. I was going to say,
like the Titans, they had the best record in the AFC even without Derrick Henry. But I don't look at the Titans as some juggernaut like Kansas City or Buffalo. The Colts, I know they have Jonathan Taylor, but you have a 38-year-old quarterback and, you know, Darius Shaquille Leonard or whatever is coming off injury too. Quentin Nelson. Like, I see that. I could see a path in where Jacksonville is so much better than they were a year ago, and the top of the AFC South comes down a notch to where Jacksonville can be in contention late in the year.
You lost A.J. Brown with Tennessee. You know who Tannehill is, and he ain't much. And if Derrick Henry ain't the whole kit and caboodle for them like he's been in the past because he's coming off an injury, you could see them slipping. If Matt Ryan is well past his prime, which we know he is, but he's got nothing left in the tank, we could see them crap in the bed. It's the easiest division, I think, to go get from one of those teams. But there's still so many questions. I'm one of those guys that wasn't impressed at all with Trevor Lawrence a year ago, but you're right. They upgraded so much with not just the quality of head coach, but an offensive-minded head coach that has done a ton for quarterbacks, that it is going to be intriguing to see that he could possibly do something with Trevor Lawrence right away. and the skill position players are there. So, yeah, I could see that being a possibility.
I might have just talked myself into a Jags AFC South futures bet for they win the AFC championship. Now, look, I still think it's a long shot, but to Rex Ryan's point, like, you have to eliminate the logic of it. It's not going to be the best roster. It's going to be who has the better path to winning the most games that they possibly can. Because I agree with you. If we eliminate Baltimore there, then Denver's roster, compared to these other teams, stacks up better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. But they have to play Kansas City twice. They have to play the Raiders twice. They have to play the Chargers twice. Whereas the Jags are going to be playing the Colts, Titans, and Texans twice. And then, of course, all the other games. But I think that if it's one team that you just figure has no chance at all, I could see Jacksonville making a run.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can understand your logic behind it. I just think that because you have all the pieces in play, as tough as the division is, I'd still go Denver before I would go with Jacksonville. Because if, you know, Russell Wilson's problem that we heard him bitch about the entire time was they don't put enough good players around me, and you know that now his defense is really good, and we've seen this play out with Peyton Manning going into a Super Bowl caliber team in the past and it work out well. And with everybody else they have on their roster offensively to help fortify the offense of Russell Wilson, I think that the potential is there that they can be better than the Chargers. Would that be a reach? No. Would it be better than the Raiders? I could see that too. I think their biggest obstacle is the Chiefs, but I still think that they could do some things to where they could be in the mix.
I'll be honest, too. I have a bit of a bias against Russell Wilson. I feel like Russell's slightly overrated, and the fact that he's getting older and older, he hasn't had very good second halves of the season. Like, I hold that against Denver.
I mean, I think when you look at it from Russell, and a lot of people don't realize this, never has a guy been in the MVP discussion more in the first 6 to 8 weeks of an NFL season, only to fall off a cliff every single time, to where Russell Wilson's never finished in the top three for an MVP.
Yeah. Excuse me while making that Jacksonville future bet. 713-780-ESPN. Best chance from going last to first. We didn't even mention Detroit. Are we disrespecting Brendan here? Are we disrespecting the Detroit Lions with our native Detroit man, Brendan Riley?
I think they're going to be better.
I don't believe in them at all, but I think the case could at least be made that the division is another weak division and the Lions played close in games last year. I wouldn't pick them, but I think that there's an argument to be made for it.
I think they're going to be much better. I think that they continue to do what they haven't been able to do for a decade, which is stockpile good draft picks that look like they're going to turn out. You've drafted for the offensive line. Now you drafted a pass rusher. I think their running back room is better than people give them credit for. I think your biggest question mark is quarterback. But with Green Bay being vulnerable because they lost Devontae Adams and didn't replace him, and with the Bears still being awful and the Vikings being, you know, Kirk Cousins' team, I think the Lions is another team that it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Them making the playoffs would terrify me because I'm already worried they believe in Jared Goff.
Oh, yeah.
If they made the playoffs, I certainly think they would believe in Jared Goff.
Hard Knocks Lions season debut tomorrow. 713-780-ESPN.
He's not going to excel there, is he?
I think he is.
I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. I can tell. Who was your pick? Who's a team that was in last place last year that will be in first place this year? Jags at plus 700. Just saying.
Hey, by the way, I got to correct something, too, because I get them mixed up, but I watch both of them. Pawn Stars and Storage Wars.
Oh, yeah. Storage Wars is the one I watched.
Yeah. I was talking Storage Wars the whole time, but Pawn Stars used to be pretty good, too.
What is that? What's
that? That's the one where the guys run the pawn shop, and then you get people that come in trying to get, you know, what's this value or what do you give me for that? And then they stumble on some gems. But then you know that a lot of them are set up, I think, at a certain point, and you start going, I don't think that guy just walked into a pawn shop in Vegas and said, what's this worth?
Joe, I got a secret for you. Reality television's not that real.
Yeah, I know.
All right, Davis Mills.
Call cops.
If he's Ryan Tannehill this year, is that okay? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So, the other day, it was Friday, Brendan Riley, he left the Killer Bees for a day.
Benedict
Brendan went on to co-host with Stutzer on the Will House. Sounded great, by the way. I listened on my 75-minute commute home. Not bitter about that at all. Sounded very good. They were talking about Davis
Mills.
Helicopter
was down?
There was some. I think there was a nasty wreck on 45.
Oh.
Back-to-back days, actually.
I thought you normally take the Kobe copter and just from parking garage to parking garage.
75-minute commute home is wearing on me. It is wearing
on me. If that was daily, that would be unbearable.
It's usually about an hour, but it was 75 minutes Thursday and Friday because there was a fatality. There's no other way around that. Yeah, so the traffic was back a bit, but it's usually even an hour wears on you. But anyways, they were talking, he and Stutes, about who Davis Mills can be. I don't even know what how it got there, Brendan. How did y'all get to Davis Mills being Ryan Tannehill?
We were talking about the love he's been getting from the national media.
Tannehill?
No. Davis Mills has been getting a ton of love from the national media. And Cody and I think are the two highest people on Davis Mills, probably at the station. You don't think so?
I was starting to think. Not that I disagree. I'm trying to think.
But anyways, the way we got there was discussing he could improve a lot this year, but maybe that's still not enough to not go away from him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, the question was, if he gets to what Tannehill did last year, that's a improvement from the year before for Davis Mills. But is that enough to stick with him?
You can say you can stick with him. I don't think it should preclude you from going out and getting another quarterback in the draft if one of those top three quarterbacks or top four quarterbacks in the draft present themselves with one of your two first-round picks. I just think that, like we said, whether it's for competition or otherwise, I don't think that they should – I don't think there should be anything to deter them from drafting a quarterback next draft.
I don't think that's sticking with Davis Mills, though. Like, if you're drafting a quarterback with one of your first two picks in the first round, I think that lets you know what they think of Davis Mills. I don't think that's sticking with Mills. He might be on the roster. He might be the understudy. He might even start the first four games. But if you're drafting a quarterback with one of the two first-rounders next year, you're not sticking with Mills. We have our answer.
I don't know. See, I think that you can draft a quarterback, but know that Davis Mills showed enough improvement that you could go with him for another year to continue to his development. In the meantime, you want to see through practices and all the different, scrimmages and ones-on-ones and ones-on-twos, you can see if you're developing another quarterback like the Patriots did with Garoppolo. At a certain point, you can either play him or trade him or, vice versa. The same thing with Mills. But I think that you have a commodity that other teams would be interested in.
Garoppolo is what, a third or a fourth? Like,
He was a second or a third, maybe?
I know they traded him for a second. I thought they drafted him closer to the middle rounds.
Maybe. Like,
he was in the second round. He was the second round. He was 62nd pick, so late second round. If you're drafting a quarterback in the first round, though, you're not drafting that quarterback with the idea that he's going to be the backup for any team. The only exception that's been the case.
For the short term, you are. For the long term, you're not.
Exactly. The only exception, and then that's what you're saying. Even if Davis Mills is the starter next year, but you've drafted one of the quarterbacks in the first round, you're saying that Davis Mills is not the future.
So what? Because then another team's going to want Davis Mills.
But that means you're not really committing to him.
You are short term. You're giving him the starting job for another year.
That's like the Chiefs committing to Alex Smith when they had Pat Mahomes.
So?
That's not committing to Alex Smith.
But as long as you're upgrading the team at some point by getting extra value for what you do with whoever you move on.
No, I'm fine with the scenario. Like, I'm not anti this scenario. If it means that you draft, let's just use Bryce Young as an example. I doubt that you're drafting Bryce Young with the idea that you're going to sit him behind Davis Mills for a year. But just assume that we do. Like, Trey Lance sat behind.
I don't think he'd play right away first year.
Bryce Young?
Yeah.
There's way more evidence in the last five seasons that anybody you're drafting in the top 10 at the quarterback position is playing immediately than
sitting. But that's also because most of the other guys on the rosters of those teams were hot garbage.
Yeah, but sure. Like, I'm not even like opposed to this. Like, if Trey Lance sitting behind Jimmy Garoppolo for a year, but they weren't committing to Jimmy Garoppolo. Right. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't part of their future plans. When the Chiefs drafted Pat Mahomes and they traded up for Pat Mahomes, they weren't committed to Alex Smith. When the Texans traded up for Deshaun Watson and they started Tom Savage for a game, they weren't committed to Tom Savage. Like, I'm not opposed to that idea, but I just don't think that's commitment to Davis Mills. Like,
it's short term commitment. It's not sure, getting engaged and getting married. It's like you're the flavor of the week, not the month or the year. But look, like, you still taste good.
But who's your franchise quarterback?
I mean,
would you be willing to CBD. Get engaged to Davis Mills
right.
if he's as good as Ryan Tannehill?
No. I don't think so. I don't think for the long term I would.
Exactly. Like, I feel like, and that's where I'm at too. Like, if you bring it back to like the Ryan Tannehill conversation, the Titans are trying to find a way to upgrade over Ryan Tannehill currently, right now.
They drafted a quarterback.
It was a flyer.
Sure,
sure.
But why not?
But do you think that the Titans weren't kicking the tires on potentially like trading for another quarterback?
Especially with the message it sends. Do you think that whether it would depend? Obviously, it's different when you take him in the first round too, like Green Bay did.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter where you take him. If you take another quarterback, that's sending a message to your quarterback, your current quarterback, whether you like it or not. that your days are numbered.
And that was my point. And that's the point that I was making. Like, if the Texans are sitting in an opportunity where Davis Mills is Ryan Tannehill, which I would say is mediocre, is okay, and then you draft a quarterback, you're sending a message to Davis Mills that we have plans at our quarterback position that don't involve Davis Mills. Now, Ryan Tannehill has been, like, he's been all right. He's been fine. I don't look at Ryan Tannehill as top 10 quarterback. I don't look at him as a top 15 quarterback. What makes the Titans' offense tough to stop, too, has nothing to do with the passing attack. It has everything to do with Derrick Henry. It has everything to do with what you had in A.J. Brown. Like, Ryan Tannehill is a game manager. He protects the football. He's not asked to really win games, but he's asked not to lose games. Ryan Tannehill, in my mind, is not a franchise quarterback. No. So if Davis Mills is Ryan Tannehill, okay. I feel pretty much the same about Davis Mills than I do now.
We've talked about in the past, just because you're paid like a franchise quarterback doesn't mean you have the abilities and the capabilities to be a franchise quarterback. You were just in the right place at the right time. Tannehill's overpaid. Kirk Cousins is overpaid. Do they do a good job? Sure. But are they capable of doing a great job? I don't think so.
But what I think made the conversation complicated is we're not saying he's Ryan Tannehill forever. I would move on from Ryan Tannehill forever. In year two, it puts you in an interesting spot where I think in year two, that would be a pretty solid year. What I think is if he were to have a Ryan Tannehill year in year two, you're in this tough spot where you probably don't want to commit to him, but there are teams out there who absolutely would benefit from a Davis Mills on his contract.
It's like Garoppolo handing it off with as good of a season as they had or keeping the momentum going to have the season that they had. But at the end of the year going, thanks for the memories, you're gone. Trey Lance is our future for the long term, but still knowing there's value out there. And unlike Garoppolo, he's not dinged up and he's not damaged goods. There's going to be plenty of teams that are going to be knocking on the door for Davis Mills, knowing still young, plenty of tread on the tires. And who says he can't get even better? It's just if he's not in your plans, he could be in ours.
This is really my hang-up of Davis Mills, though. Like, I think it's likely he could be Ryan Tannehill in 2022, if I'm being completely honest. I think it's likely he could be Jimmy Garoppolo in 2022. But look at those two quarterbacks. Jimmy Garoppolo was being drafted over 2 years ago, and they selected Trey Lance. They traded up to get Trey Lance because they realize they're limited with Jimmy Garoppolo. I think the Titans view Ryan Tannehill in the very same way. Like, they haven't been as aggressive as San Francisco to move up in the draft. They also haven't had the draft capital to be able to do so. But they had their eyes on a Malik Willis who, yeah, he slipped. Yeah, he was a good value by the time that they ended up drafting Malik Willis. But they have an idea that potentially they want to get better at the quarterback position sooner rather than later as well. So, like, if Davis Mills does have a Ryan Tannehill season, like, I feel like the Texans are in the same exact spot that they're currently in. They have a quarterback who's pretty good. He's in the top 15, 20 of the league. He's all right. He's not going to lose you games, but he's certainly not going to win you games. I don't want that type of quarterback. I feel like you need to aggressively attack the quarterback position. It is one of the most two important positions in American sports. The quarterback position and the best basketball player in an NBA team. And if you don't have a top 10 caliber quarterback in the NFL, then you need this really, really great team around them to have any chance to be a consistent contender. But as soon as you get that top 10 quarterback, you can be a contender every single year. So if Davis Mills is Ryan Tannehill, great. Outstanding. He's 15th best quarterback in the NFL. It's still an overwhelming amount of meh.
Yeah, you need, in order to get where everybody wants this franchise to get to and beyond, places they've never been before, your franchise quarterback cannot be the question. It has to be the answer. And so, therefore, like, Tannehill is questioned constantly, and he deserves it, right? Kirk Cousins questioned constantly, and he deserved it. Maybe to a lesser extent, Alex Smith was better than those two, but still got questioned about his abilities, and they drafted Patrick Mahomes for a reason. So, at a certain point, you can play chess when everyone is playing checkers, as much as it annoys me sometimes to where that phrase is used. But if you're smart enough to be like the Patriots did or the Chiefs did and say, hey, look, we're planning this out way better than you guys think. We've got a guy that's going to show enough promise and is also going to take our franchise places for the next year or two. At a certain point, if we find out he's exactly who we thought he was, we've got a guy we're grooming to be right there ready to take those reins with a better football team around him and run. But if he turns out to continue to develop, we know there's going to be no shortage of suitors because there are other franchises that aren't thinking like we are that just need a quarterback that can get us better.
If Davis Mills is Ryan Tannehill in 2022, is that good? Is it bad? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Gary, we'll get to you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
If Davis Mills is Ryan Tannehill, is that okay? 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Gary, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's up, Gary?
How's it going on, guys? It's absolutely not okay if he's Ryan Tannehill. At the quarterback position, I mean, you don't absolutely need great, but you pretty much need a great top 10 quarterback to compete year in, year out. Like, it's not the NBA, there's no championships promised, but Alex Smith was a good to very good quarterback. Kirk Cousins is actually a pretty good quarterback. Ryan Tannehill, statistically, is a good quarterback, and those teams are going to win absolutely nothing. And each one of those teams have either moved on or will be looking to move on. So if the opportunity presents itself to get the guy from Alabama or, you know, Stroud from Ohio State, you always aim for as best as you can get at the quarterback position, because good is just not good enough at quarterback. Maybe for your, you know, cornerback, defensive tackle, but quarterback, you need to go for elite every single time in the NFL.
Appreciate the call, Gary. And that's where I'm at.
Good stuff, Gary.
With the quarterback position is that, look, Ryan Tannehill is fine whenever you swing and miss on everything else. It's where the Titans were. The Titans weren't in a position ever since they brought in Tannehill to go out and get that franchise-changing quarterback. And I don't even know if they want to, because they kind of want to build around Derrick Henry and do things a little differently than the rest of the NFL. But the easiest way, and I know that finding a quarterback can be challenging. Look how long the Houston Texans had to deal with, you know, not great quarterback play at that position. You know, Matt Schaub had his years. But they went out and they aggressively attacked getting Deshaun Watson. And they picked him 12. I mean, they traded up to number 12 to get Deshaun Watson. So, like, it's a lot of player identification, too, and being able to hit on your draft picks. But Ryan Tannehill is just a guy. Could it be just a guy better than some of the other just a guys around the NFL? Sure. Is he going to cost you, you know, in terms of, you know, taking care of the ball, not turning it over, not putting the team in a position of failure? Yeah, he's going to do those things. But he's also not going to win you games.
No, isn't it semantics in terms of when it actually happens? But you think about it, and it's at what point does the light go on for either you and or the quarterback and realize he's not going to be more than he already has shown you? Because you look at Green Bay, right? They drafted the guy to be the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers sooner rather than later. At a certain point, whether you figure out Aaron's still got plenty left in the tank or Jordan Love just ain't that guy, then you draw the conclusion to make your football team the best. You stick with whichever guy is that guy, and you try and get something for the other guy. But it's smart football business in the way you do it. Kansas City did it. You mentioned it with the Texans. The fact is, you already had a very well-paid quarterback on your roster, but you knew that the light went on in Rick Smith's office. He wasn't the guy. He just didn't have what you thought he had. So now you make a move to right the wrong to try and salvage it at the right time, and it almost worked out for you because you got the guy at that point that was better than the guy you had, and you could find, hopefully, something to do with the other guy that was the odd man out, but move him on to get something for him.
8693, if he's Tannehill, of course it's bad, but it gives you the answer you need that you just got to draft the first-round quarterback. Tannehill is trash. He's the reason they lost to the Bengals in the playoffs. Only reason is he has a decent regular season is because defenses load up the box to stop Derrick Henry.
So you guys both want Davis Mills to be the quarterback this year. I know he is, but like you both are on that side of things. What does he have to do for you guys where you go, no, this is the guy?
See, a lot of it, it's look, the numbers are one thing, but you got to be able to see a guy that's like good enough to win you football games. And look, I don't think Ryan Tannehill is there. And you could point to some of Tannehill's numbers and be like, oh, Ryan Tannehill, he's solid. He's productive. I watch Ryan Tannehill play. That dude's not scaring me. I'm not scared of Ryan Tannehill. I need to see some elements of Davis Mills over the 17 games in 2022 where he leads a two-minute drive where I'm like, man, if I'm down by 3 points late in the game, I have faith in that guy to lead me down the field. Here's the other thing with Tannehill. Tannehill has the Derrick Henry. He's had the A.J. Brown up until this season. Davis Mills has Brandon Cooks. Who, look, I like Brandon Cooks. QB, he's a wide receiver one, bottom level wide receiver one. He doesn't have that running back. Davis Mills has to show me the capability that he can put a team on his back and win football games.
Now, fairly or unfairly, Brendan, I think the answer to that question is you also have to have a good enough team around you so that they can show you what they can do when they do have a good team. And I don't know that – I think it's unfair, but I don't think he has a good enough team around him, no matter how well they drafted, to be able to show you enough that he can convince you. Now, to Jeremy's point, before you move on from that.
Like,
I'm not moving on from it, though.
No, but like Deshaun. Like Deshaun 2 years ago, whenever he was a Texan, won four games. Like, he only won four games. There wasn't a good team around him, but did you have faith in Deshaun as a touching QB?
Well, but you also saw a resume from college on, too, where you knew exactly what he brought to the table and it was only going to get better. I think that when you look at Mills, that's why I said it's unfair, but I don't think the roster's good enough around him that he's gonna knock your socks off, because it's what I've said for weeks on end when we've been talking about this. Look, I want to see a guy that can matriculate the ball down the field. I want to see a guy that can lead you on scoring drives. But you know what? If the guys that he's handing the ball off to or throwing to aren't capable of executing the other half of the plan, then I don't also want him to be negatively looked at, but I also realize, hey, look, I can't see enough by if I had better skill position players around him to make a judgment that I'm going to pass on what could be a franchise-altering quarterback waiting in the wings in the next year's draft.
See, I disagree. Like, I don't agree that Davis Mills has a team around him. I do agree that Davis Mills has a team around him that isn't, like, great. Like, to me, it's bottom third of the NFL. And that saying bottom third might be a nice thing. That might be complimentary, and it might be a bit of a reach, if we're being completely honest with you. But a quarterback, look, and I don't even care that it's his second year. I understand that he's very young. We should see flashes. If Davis Mills is the guy beyond 2022, we should be seeing flashes of him driving this team down the field, yeah, leading two-minute drives, that, but having huge games, putting a team on his back, even with mediocre talent around him. He should be making Brevin Jordan and Farrell Brown look better than Brevin Jordan and Farrell Brown. He should have Nico Collins having a really good season. And it's not, look, it's his second year, so there's going to be inconsistencies. He's going to have games where he just looks terribly, and he has duds, and he's going to throw two interceptions, no touchdowns, 150 yards. But we have to see the upside in Davis Mills to where, like, man, this guy's got a shot to be really good in the NFL. And people think he did that in the last five games last year.
They do, but here's the thing. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, but what I'm saying is if that's going to – based on seeing some glimpses of that, I don't think that that's going to be enough, no matter what the scenario is, for Nick Caserio to say, I'm not going to even think about drafting another quarterback because I've seen that out of Davis Mills. Because I don't know, as much as I think I know, that he's going to be that guy that with better players around him can continue to grow and do those things. But I don't think that that's enough to be able to fall back on to say, but I'm not going to draft one of the top three quarterbacks in the draft. I'm going to still believe that what I saw was enough to continue to keep developing, and that's why I said he could be the quarterback this year and next, and then I'll let it play out from there. But I don't think anything, and that's why I said it could be unfair to Davis Mills, but I don't think anything is going to be enough to where you say, I've seen enough that I'm not going to even think about another quarterback.
Right. To me, it simply comes down to over-exceeding expectations. Like, if he over-exceeds the expectations of being Ryan Tannehill, being Jimmy Garoppolo, and he looks better, like, he looks like he can potentially be a top 10 quarterback, I think that's where it takes you out of the equation. 713-780-ESPN, Davis Mills, if he's Tannehill, what does that mean? 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Cecil, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Cecil?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How y'all doing today?
What's up, man?
Hey, I just wanted to chime in a little bit. I wanted to disagree with the last guy that said that the Texans would need Mills to be a better quarterback than Tannehill. I think the Texans should be happy, elated, if Mills performed at the level of Tannehill. I don't believe that Tannehill is trash. I think that Tannehill is sufficient enough to get a team to the Super Bowl. If you think about the Baltimore Ravens, they went to the Super Bowl with Trent Dilfer and Joe Flacco, and neither one of those guys were top 10 quarterbacks. And if you think about even a little further back when the Chicago Bears went to the Super Bowl, they had Jim McMahon. Jim McMahon was not a top 10 quarterback. All of these teams went to the Super Bowl on the strength of their defenses. You know, defensive wins championships. And we know what the 85 Bears did. We know what Ray Lewis and the defense over in Baltimore did, and we know what the kicker did for Baltimore as well, and their quarterbacks did not have to be top 10 quarterbacks, and they all went to the Super Bowl.
Appreciate the call, Cecil. Look, here's the thing. I mean, that was a different age of NFL football. In today's day and age, with how pass-happy and offensive-minded teams that win the Super Bowl are, with how big of a role quarterbacks play, it's a different day. I mean, you're bringing up references that I don't disagree with because we've brought them up before in terms of the best game managers. After Jim McMahon, Rex Grossman got his team to a Lovie Smith coach Bears team with Rex Grossman got to a Super Bowl because of the fact that they had other elements. But I don't think that was then, this is now, and that's apples to oranges because it's a different way of playing NFL football. It's a different offensive-minded way that teams are playing NFL football. I don't think that defense can help you, but I think that you have to have dominant players and you have to have dominant defenses on top of still having a quarterback that's more than a game manager to win a Super Bowl, in my opinion.
Yeah, I hate the like revisionist. Let's look at 1980s football when we're talking about 2022. Trent Dilfer was over two decades ago, and people forget. Yeah, Trent Dilfer won the Super Bowl at Baltimore. People forget that the Baltimore Ravens then let Trent Dilfer walk in free agency because they didn't think much of Trent Dilfer. Joe Flacco was 10 years ago when he won the Super Bowl in 2012. So much has changed with the way the NFL has played
in
the last 10 years.
Even in 10 years, but you can go from 10 to 20 years and go Flacco and go Dilfer and go Brad Johnson of Tampa Bay because they had the dominant defense and Grossman and McMahon, all those things. But give me something recently that tells to convince me otherwise that that's not the way football's played now.
If you don't have a really good quarterback, the chances of you being able to win significant football games when you have Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, and the AFC alone, like, good luck. Like, do you think Davis Mills is going to go toe-to-toe with Josh Allen's and Pat Mahomes of the world? I don't. Look, and that's why I said he's going to have to overseed expectations. Like, listen to this conversation. If Davis Mills is a mediocre quarterback in the AFC, you should be hoping that you find the next Pat Mahomes and Josh Allen and aggressively attack that. That way you can be a contender for a decade. 713-780-ESPN. Lance McCullers pitched yesterday in Sugarland. It appears that he is close to returning the Houston Astros. How do you handle it? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Now celebrating their 5-year anniversary. That's saying something. When you've been around for 5 years, that means you're doing something right. And Dr. O and his staff should be congratulated on 5 years in business and taking care of Houstonians and people in the surrounding areas. And you could be the next in line to reap the benefits as well. You're not trying to win a gold medal, you're trying to win the day. And by winning the day, you got to have enough energy to be able to do the things you need to do for work, for your family, for your workout goals, etc. You don't need to be running out of juice and realizing that you need a nap and figuring out, well, maybe tomorrow I can get to some of the things that are still left on my to-do list. No, you need the people at Apollo Men's Health. Go to ApolloMH.com right now and see all the different ways they can help you. And once you do, you'll find out there's probably some way that they can help you that you've been struggling with. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you've been struggling, they have answers in how to get you back where you need to be. They take care of people on a daily basis. They also, when you book that first appointment online, will make sure to tell you most major insurance is accepted and discounts of military personnel and first responders. There's no reason why you shouldn't book an appointment and see if they can help you too. They put you on a plan that works by figuring out, asking you the questions. What are you trying to achieve? Where are you struggling? Is it a workout plan? Is it recovering quicker? Is it just that energy I was talking about? And then they get you going from there. 5 years in business. Happy anniversary to Apollo Men's Health and Dr. O for doing phenomenal work in the Houston area. Be the next that they can help too. Check them out today. They're good people doing great things. They're the people at Apollo Men's Health.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Every Monday at 2, it's our Mailbag Monday. Any question you want to ask us, anything, you can ask us TV shows. You can ask us dating advice. You can ask us what we thought of Brendan. Leaving us for the Will House on Friday. You can ask us whatever you want. Mailbag Monday coming up at 2 o'clock, 713-780-ESPN for that. Or Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. So Lance McCullers pitched yesterday in Sugarland against his BFF, Dallas Keuchel. Here was Lance yesterday talking about the idea of, do you want to make another rehab start?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not, I don't want to. I mean, everyone, you know, has been great to me. I mean, I can't say enough about, you know, the Sugarland Space Cowboys and the staff that they have here. And we have great guys in our AAA, you know, organization, and the coach staff is amazing. And it just, you know, if I feel like I'm healthy, you know, I just want to, get back, and I want, you know, I want to pitch with the Astros.
Lance yesterday, 86 pitches. The results were not great. 7 hits, 5 earned runs, walked 3, struck out 5. Like, one thing to look at, I know that there's some bleeders there, had some bloopers. I think there was a couple of defensive mishaps that maybe weren't ruled errors, things like that. I don't really draw a whole line into the or a whole lot into the results when you're making the rehab assignments. I look more at the, okay, what's your pitch usage? How hard are you throwing? Like, looking at what he did yesterday, that I'm more concerned about than the 7 hits, 5 earned runs, over 86 pitches, was the fact that his fastball velocity was down a bit.
I had an issue with that, too. I was hoping that it was the jugs guns they were using or something was different, but the last time he pitched was right there at that same field when his velocity was better. So when we talk about it, it wasn't about, and look, I would have liked to have had him at a better performance. It's also very weird and quirky how he ended up pitching against Keuchel again in the same venue. I don't know how the minor league scheduling works, why they did that twice.
They play 6-game series.
That's weird.
6 games over 7 days. I think they started that with the COVID thing, and then they just kept it because it's like easier on cost.
And that makes sense. But look, I wish that I loved the confidence and the statements that he was making, and I would have felt a lot better about it had the velocity not been down and had he not given up 5 runs, including 2 home runs. But I also understand that he's a major league pitcher that's been there, done that, and wants to do it again as quickly as possible and get back to the big league club. It's different because this seems Jake Odorizzi-ish, but he's not Jake Odorizzi. He's always been a good teammate, and he's never been a guy to dust it up for no reason. That's why I understand where he's coming from. And because, again, we go back to this, you have such a big lead in the division, and you traded away Odorizzi, and if you want to go to, you know, 6-man rotation, you want to try it again, and you want to see how he does against major league hitting, and then how he recovers, and where his velocity's at, I'm all for it. Look, I know that I didn't think he'd be this far already, this quickly. I'm impressed that he threw 86 pitches. I like the fact that with each start, we've seen more pitches thrown, no limitations on the amount of breaking pitches that were involved. Those are all good things. Now, just like everything else, I want to use this last window of regular season Astros baseball to figure out who's going to be on the playoff roster, where they're going to be if he's going to be on the roster, and what role he can play. So I'm not opposed to him saying, look, let's do it. Let's throw him out there, and you've got some series coming up against whether it's divisional opponents or otherwise where you know they're lesser. Go ahead. Go get him.
We've been saying mid-August since very early in the season, and then when he started his rehab assignment, our prediction was our pick the date was August 15th at Chicago. It seems like he's actually a couple days ahead of that to where if he is pitching his next start with the Astros, that it's going to be on this homestand that begins tomorrow, the 6-game homestand, Rangers for 3, then the A's for 3. So it sounds to me like you're on board with just go ahead and bring him back up now.
Let's just see what you got. You got to know, right? The last thing that I want is for him to make more minor league starts and then be thrust into a situation in the playoffs where you believe because of what he was doing in the minor leagues and a one starter or two against the A's or someone left on your schedule that he's ready to be a playoff contributor and then he gets lit up or ends up not being who you thought he could be. That's why as much as we said August 15th was about our deadline to get him on the big league club, then get him four starts or so in the majors to see if he's capable of getting major league hitters out and good major league hitters.
The question's probably one more start or no more starts in Sugarland because they have to bring him up by August 20th because of the 30 days that pitchers get on their rehab assignment. I want him to just go ahead and bring him back up now too for two reasons. One's the Lance McCullers reason. Okay, like the competition that you're playing in AAA, like I think you're probably working more on your pitches and your arsenal. It's almost a spring training start.
It's like a closer in a non-save situation. A lot of guys mentally just can't get up for it.
Yeah. I think it's more like spring training to like where
Same
you're
difference.
Working on your stuff versus trying to get out hitters. So I want to see him pitching at the major league level, because look, that's the bar, right? We're talking about Lance McCullers pitching in the playoffs and being part of a four-man rotation. Last time I checked, the teams that are making the playoffs are going to be pretty good. So I want to see him start to attack big league hitters, start to try to get big league hitters out. So I would go ahead and bring him back up for the next time that he's pitching. It'd probably be on this six-game homestand that we were to see him back, if that is the case. The second part is because I want to see the six-man rotation back. The fact that you traded Jake Odorizzi, you've went back to the five-man. You haven't seen many trips through the rotation, anything like that, to where it's taxing arms. But I want to go ahead and see the six-man rotation for a variety of different reasons. Look, Justin Verlander is unbelievable. He's the ERA leader in the American League by like 25 points. He's the win leader in the American League, I think, by 3 wins. We know that Justin Verlander is going to be probably the Cy Young in the American League and has been unbelievable what he has done this year. I want to protect a 39-year-old coming off of Tommy John. So six-man rotation. Framber Valdez has been great, but I want to protect his arm with a six-man rotation. Jose Urquidy, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, all of those, I want to protect their arms, and I also think that they're fresher with the six-man rotation. You have the luxury because you're not chasing anybody in the standings to where it helps you from a Lance McCullers point of view. Even if he gets shelled for his first couple of starts, who cares? You have the big lead in the division, right? You're sitting out all your players anyways. So bring him back for Lance. Bring him back to save the arms of everybody else. I want Lance McCullers back on this team for his next start.
Yeah, look, you got to see what you have. And I think that because you have the great position that you're in with the division, you need to know sooner rather than later, so that when you're writing out your playoff roster and penciling in guys that could be impactful for you, got to know if he can get outs. Got to know if he can be what you need him to be. And if what you need him to be is one of those four starters, well, then you better damn well be able to show on the major league level for about a month of time you're capable of getting major league hitters out. Because you're right, whether you say it's spring training or it's a major league pitcher pitching in the minor leagues where you know that his heart isn't in it in terms of how he's got to really kind of dial down and bear down and get guys. But now if you damn well know if he walks back out on that mound at Minute Maid Park, that the adrenaline and the juices are flowing and he knows he's got something to prove. I'm back, people. I didn't need surgery. I understand it took a little longer than you'd liked, but I need to see a couple of those starts.
So it sounds like we both want him back for his next appearance, his next start. Now, are we both bringing him back as a starter? Yeah, same here.
Yep.
So now the other question is five-man or six-man rotation? Do you go with the six-man with McCullers?
Six-man for a lot of reasons. I think Garcia already, a year ago when I thought it would show, Garcia to me looks like a guy that maybe has a little bit too much wear and tear in the last year and a half and maybe needs to dial it down a little bit. He needs the extra day. I think that Verlander, it used to be before you got to the innings threshold, that Verlander was a guy that for your own best interest for the season, you were thinking about it, but now it's the season and you actually can convince him, who's been the biggest pushback, hey, Justin, we're doing this for you too. Because the last thing you need to do is really increase your innings load, whether it be for the playoffs looking tired or for free agency a year from now when you want to convince people you need Scherzer money. I think it makes sense and he'd be more amicable to doing it now. But I think the six-man rotation is the way to go.
I think Verlander getting that 130 innings also eliminates that whole conversation a bit.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, I think that he's good with that. I'm with the six-man rotation, too, for a variety of different reasons. Now, probably bring that back down to five men close to September. September-ish, somewhere around there.
We talked about that, too. You got to ramp up the four guys you're going to use to be ready to bounce back as quick as possible because you're going to be coming back on short rest.
You can map it out to where, like, okay, five-man rotation, you got 20 games left, that's four turns in the rotation. So you can map it out. It might not be exactly September 1st, but early September, I think that that's the answer. Lance McCullers back with this team for his next appearance is what we're hoping for, what we're wanting, and then back to the six-man rotation, too. Now, it does bring up the interesting thing. Like, the Astros right now are going to have to send somebody back down, too, with Lance McCullers. So there's going to be a tough send down because the two names, if you're going from the bullpen, which you have to because the Astros are carrying 13, you can only carry 13 pitchers. It's either going to be Seth Martinez or Brian Abreu.
It's going to
be one of the two.
I wish I knew which way I was leaning on that one.
Well, I know which way you're leaning. Jake Odorizzi pitched for Atlanta, by the way, his first start. Odorizzi, watch.
It didn't go so well.
Typical Odorizzi start. 3 runs, 2 earned, over 6 hits. He went 4 2/3. That's what fans in Atlanta are thinking about when they think of Jake Odorizzi on the mound, on the bump there.
Yeah, they got a steady dose of what we got far too used to, which was just mediocre average baseball when playing good teams or decent teams that can hit a little bit and not getting every start against the A's. And I think that, like I said, for both parties involved, it was the right move to make. He could still be good for the Braves, but the Astros are better off without him.
It's amazing that James Clay got something more than a bucket of curveballs for Jake Odorizzi. What a job. What a job. 713-780-ESPN every Monday at 2. It's our Monday mailbag. You ask the Killer Bees whatever the heck you want to ask us. It's we do it when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.